Welcome to Weekend Let's Hear It. I'm Kara Lawrence. Glad you could come along today. He's best known for portraying the character Ron Swanson on the NBC series Parks and Recreation. But Nick Offerman doesn't limit himself to TV comedy. He's coming to the Kalamazoo State Theater in a new one-man show. And Western Michigan University student and WMUK reporter Rainey Cooch called him up to talk about it.
This is Rainey Cooch with WMUK. I am here with actor, comedian, author, and woodworker Nick Offerman, who is here to talk about his stand-up show, All Rise, coming to the Kalamazoo State Theater on Wednesday, November 20th. First of all, would you mind talking about how your idea for this one-man show evolved and why you wanted to do it in the first place?
Sure. It's my third show of this ilk. But the first two I had a great time doing. They're called American Ham and Full Bush, and they were quality entertainment that I stand behind, and we had a lot of fun with. But this is the first time that it occurred to me to write material since Donald Trump was elected president, and a malaise fell over our country, and I just felt like, gosh, I would really like to cheer up the people deliver a little bit of medicine, if possible. And so I wrote this with that in mind. It attempts to be a little bit bipartisan in that it makes fun of everybody. Makes fun of all of us for the tribal behaviors that we can fall into, but of course there are some big ticket items in the buffoonery going on at the White House that can't really be avoided if you're going to talk about anything for 90 minutes.
In promotional material for your show, you say that it will encourage audiences to brandish a better side of humanity. What kind of commentary on humanity do you plan on sharing?
Just simply to remember the very fact of our humanity. You know, there's cause for everybody to be shaking their fists at each other. But what I try and do is take a step back from that and say, look, you guys, we're all jackasses. Everybody in the world is stupid. If you don't think you're stupid, then I have bad news for you. You're extra stupid.
Yeah.
And so it's with that in mind. It's sort of, first of all, addressing our problems with humility and saying, well, of course we have problems. We'll always have problems. Human beings are problematic because we all want different things. We require a great deal of nuance in our disagreements. Let's acknowledge that. Let's acknowledge that we're all different, but we want to ultimately get along and treat everybody fairly and equitably. And so here's a song, and here's a little dancing. And let's all go and tip our servers well.
Why can't we all get along for a minute? Everybody's all Palestinian or Israeli. If we'll just head down to the shop and enjoy the tools in it, we could build a pacifying ukulele.
Speaking about the song and the dancing, a lot of people know you for your acting and your woodworking, but not as many people know you for your musical projects. Could you speak to your musical background and why you chose to incorporate music into your live performances?
Sure. I love music. I grew up playing a little piano and a lot of saxophone. A few different times in my youth, somebody playing songs on the guitar that they had written custom for an occasion. You know, so I was in a touring theater group, and one of the guys wrote a song to the tune of John Denver's Annie song, where everybody in the traveling troupe had a verse that was a joke about them. And it was just so much fun. That particular delivery system for humor, I loved it so much. And I thought, I hope one day I'm going to try and learn to play the guitar, and in the hopes that one day I can make people laugh with funny songs. And so, you know, I started when I was 19 or 20, and I was in my early 30s by the time I wrote my first song. And now, you know, here I am almost 20 years later, and I got a few dozen songs. And the thing is, I've learned I don't have any particular musical talent. Nobody ever asks me to sing or play music because they like how it sounds. But it apparently is a very effective laughter delivery mechanism, because people really do enjoy my comedy songs as a humor pipeline. And so I always bear that in mind, because it's easy to let your vanity creep in and think, oh wow, you know, I'm really selling a lot of tickets here. Maybe I should hang up my acting shoes and just
do that. Yeah.
and maybe I should form a rock and roll band and tickle the masses. But I say, oh no, don't forget, if they aren't laughing at my songs, then they'll hear how terrible my clumsy B chord is.
Well, I mean, I guess it could be like a Weird Al Yankovic sort of thing if you really wanted to pursue that.
Weird Al is 10 times the genius that I'll ever be. I admire him profoundly, but I like it just fine. It's one of the hats that I can wear. I'm very grateful that I can you know, book some theaters and travel around and make people laugh and tell them some things I think. And apparently there's at least a theater full of people in every town that is prone to agree with me. And then, you know, then I'll go home and write a book, and then I'll go do an acting job, and then I'll eat a sandwich.
Sounds like a good day to me.
Yeah.
So you're, speaking to that, your background is in theater. Do you like the instant response you get being in front of a live audience as compared to filming for, like, a TV show or a movie?
Absolutely. It's the best part. Of all, you know, I get asked a lot, because I'm lucky enough to work in TV and film, but also on stage. And so I get asked a lot, you know, what do you like better? What's your favorite? And the best thing about all of them is that relationship that you just described. It's the instant gratification of the audience telling you whether or not you're succeeding. And when you are succeeding, it's the audience saying to you, it's like they have a toothache. And you're the dentist, and you have just pulled that painful tooth, and they tell you immediately, thank you. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, just like that.
That's the best.
You have a lot of experience with performing, but even with all this experience, do you still experience nervousness before a show?
Not really, because I am always prepared. You know, I learned, I guess, at a very young age, you know, I had a few experiences where I ended up on stage without being prepared and without being trained in any way, like as an improviser. A comedian, like some friends of mine, who can just walk on stage and destroy an audience without a word of written material. I'm not like that. So I don't get nervous, because I know that I've worked really hard on what I'm going to tell the people. And I know that it's proven. That said, just the other night, I played a show at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, which is kind of like the grand church of country music. It has such an incredible history and commands so much reverence. So there are moments like that. Or there was another night recently in Los Angeles when my friend Conan O'Brien was in the audience. And so, and he's a very skilled guitar player and singer. And so there are times like that when I then become self-conscious, you know. I think, holy cow, I'm at the Ryman, you know. What would the ghost of Johnny Cash have to say about that C minor that I just flubbed? Or, you know, I want Conan to be impressed with what I do, so that gets me in my head. But, you know, I've been down this road many times, so I take a deep breath and plunge ahead.
You have worked on multiple projects with your wife, Megan Mullally, and she made multiple appearances on Parks and Rec. You co-wrote a book together, and she also directed All Rise. Is that correct?
Yes.
What is the dynamic like when you two are working on a project together?
Well, I guess that's where we started. We met doing a play in the year 2000 in Los Angeles, and so we met as sort of bratty Confederates in the cast of a play. And so before we were romantically involved, we were humorously involved. You know, we were trying to crack each other up backstage. And that was what started our friendship, was admiring each other's sense of humor. And so that sort of has always continued. We're both professional to a fault. You know, we depend on our work ethic. We both can consider it to be irresponsible to not give everything we have to every possible performance, whether we're going to shoot a commercial for Sling TV, or, you know, we're performing on stage in front of a Broadway audience or something. We give it everything we have, and so we treat it very seriously. We take our comedy very seriously, and so, like, when Megan is directing the show, I write the show, and my friend Mark Rivers writes most of the music. I'm not a talented composer, and he certainly is, And so then, you know, I sort of cobble it together, and then Megan comes and sees it, and she says, okay, switch song number 7 for song number 3, don't talk so slow in section 4, and so forth. So the whole time, you know, when you think about it, whenever you are being funny, this goes for anybody, you're usually, if you're in a classroom or you're on the school bus or, you know, you're around the water cooler at work, I find that even if I'm trying to make strangers laugh, what I'm doing is trying to make Megan laugh, even if she's not there. You know, that's what I've learned. That's the sense of humor that I like the most about myself, and that my best friend and my wife enjoy. So even when I'm writing the show, a lot of it has the sensibility of I know Megan will see this one day, and I want her to think it's funny. And so that dynamic is present, and fortunately she often does think it's funny. But then we also have, you know, a sort of surgeon's steely demeanor of, like, okay, that was super funny, that was great when you did that, but switch this and this, or, you know, cut this. And so it's taking her acumen for shaping a performance of any sort and laying it over my clumsy raw material.
What originally drew you to pursue comedy in the first place, and who are some of your comedy heroes?
Well, I guess I never have felt like I have pursued comedy or have chosen comedy per se. I do love making people laugh, But I started in the theater where you do whatever's on the season, and I really enjoy it all equally, whether it's a deeply dramatic Shakespeare play or a Sam Shepard, you know, kitchen sink drama, or something completely absurd, or a slapstick comedy. To me, they're all, you know, they're all putting on a show and delivering medicine to an audience. The things that I'm known best for have been in the comedy genre, particularly Parks and Rec. But by and large, you know, I really am proud of my work in the TV show Fargo, which is not a comedy. And I have a show coming out next year on FX called Devs, D-E-V-S. It is certainly not a comedy. It's a sci-fi thriller. And so, my work in Chicago on stage, I was known more as a dramatic actor. But to answer the second part of your question, I was always really inspired as a kid in the 70s and 80s by people who gleaned comedy out of strangeness and sort of the weirdos in any group. So, like, we loved the show Taxi, but I especially loved Reverend Jim Ignatowski, played by Christopher Lloyd, and Andy Kaufman, of course, as Lotka. I loved Jackie Gleason, I loved Carol Burnett, and I loved Tim Conway and Harvey Korman. On Carol Burnett, they were, you know, they took sort of silly deadpan to some pretty incredible extremes, along with Carol Burnett herself. But, you know, it was always, like, more obscure. I remember in the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off and the movie The Breakfast Club, both films had these sort of overbearing, authoritative principal characters, the high school principal. Breakfast Club was Paul Gleason. Ferris Bueller was Jeffrey Jones. And they really cracked me up. The sort of pompous self-importance that these, you know, super, like, low-level administrators gave themselves, I thought was so damn funny. And so that, I feel, in hindsight, formed part of my approach, where I just take things very seriously, and I understand that can be funny to people.
So we just talked about how you've always been drawn to making people laugh, but is there more of a serious side to your show as well?
Well, I always say that I try to prepare an irresistibly delicious pizza for my audience, and I meanwhile try to sneak as much broccoli into that pizza as possible. So the show is pretty much a laugh riot, I dare say. I mean, I'm 40 cities into touring it, so I can say that with some confidence. But it's on serious subject matter. So, like, there's a bit about white supremacy, which is obviously a very serious problem. But the way I address it is by taking on the role of a white supremacist and loudly complaining about all the things that white guys have to complain about. There's a bit about toxic masculinity. There's a bit about racism. So these are all very serious issues. But here's the thing. I understand, and my audience, just like an NPR audience, generally doesn't need to be told that racism is bad. But what is very prevalent is a sort of human laziness or sense of denial, where I think a lot of our country likes to think, well, it doesn't really apply to me. Like, I feel like racism is over because I live in a small white Michigan town, and, you know, I love everybody. when the truth is you don't see everybody, and while your town may be very comfortable, it's probably also very homogenized and very even homophobic, and that's because its conservative boundaries were set up generations ago. And so it's even though a lot of us, I think, have our hearts in the right place, it's continuing to nudge us all towards that idea that, sure, maybe I feel love towards all of my fellow humans, but it's, you can feel that way and still recognize that our country does not feel that way, and that we all have to, you know, get our heads on straight and vote in the right direction until everybody feels that way. And we're a long way from that goal.
Speaking of which, I have one final question, and we already started touching on this, but your tour is taking you to almost 40 different cities across the country. What perspective does this give you on the United States?
Well, that's a great question. And the thing I've learned, I've been, you know, touring for 6 or 7 years now, and just the other day I was figuring out, I think there's maybe 2 or 3 states I haven't been to yet out of the 50. And the main thing I've learned is that I love every place. There are cities that, it's funny, you know, if you're in Chicago and you say, I'm going to go play 3 cities in Florida, people will turn their noses up. And if you're in California and you say, I got to go play Cleveland or something, you know, like, people from other places always have these opinions about places that aren't their own. And what I've learned is every place is great. And it's because every city is full of people. And people are great. Human beings are amazing. I mean, I'm addressing the issues that I think we still need to improve upon. But if you take a tiny step back and look at the arc of history, if you had told me when I was in high school in the late 80s that one day gay marriage would just be ubiquitous and legal, even though there are still religious groups handing out pamphlets to help you in case you feel like you might be attracted to the same sex. I just ran into one of these in Nashville and was like, are you kidding? Like, that's something that's infuriating to me, and it's addressed in my show. But by and large, everybody is a group of people, and they've made these cities with culture and you know, with incredible advancements, whether it's architecturally, in the arts, in food and drink, in sports, you know. We're amazing. And so whether we're being amazing in the middle of Nebraska or on the Olympic Peninsula or, you know, on the coast of the Carolinas, like, I love to see the people and get together and take their temperature. And people often say to me as well, well, aren't you scared because you're message is liberal, you know, you're very much a snowflake, as they would have it. Aren't you scared about going to places like Tennessee or Alabama or, you know, Georgia? And I say no, because there are open-minded, decent people there as well.
I understand you've come to love another man. He's studly and heroic, so I completely understand. But now your expectations are a little high, I fear. 'Cause if I had to live like him, I'd be dead within a year.
I mean, part of my particular trip is I do get a small percentage of sad people who are bad at watching television and somehow they think that Parks and Recreation is a documentary, huh. And that Ron Swanson is real, and that he's not written or concocted for a sense of humor, but instead for them to like idolize. And you know, they say, finally, our hero. And they come see my show expecting it to be, I don't know what, some sort of NRA parade or something. I don't know, but they get very upset with me.
And his scotch intake, well, it would be my liver's doom. 'Cause mine is controlled by nature and his by the whims of the writer's room. I'm not Ron Swanson. Hear me shouted from sea to sea, from Texas to Wisconsin.
And so when people are stupid with me in that way, I do my best to be gentle with them and say, look, it's okay. I'm sorry you thought, you know, I'm sorry that you're so bad at watching TV. But we can still shake hands and, you know, if it's applicable, let's get a beer. And move forward.
Get a beer and I'll tell you more about how to watch TV correctly.
Perhaps.
Thank you so much for talking with me today. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Well, it's my pleasure. And the last song of my show is entitled Us Dipshits Gotta Stick Together. And so that's the, you know, when I talk about... When I launch into the section about how stupid people are, it starts with me. And that's the key to getting along, is understanding, you know, we're each as flawed as the next person. So,
actor, comedian, musician, and woodworker Nick Offerman spoke with Rainey Cooch, a WMUK reporter and Western Michigan University student. Offerman will perform two shows at the Kalamazoo State Theater next Wednesday, November 20th at 7 and 9:30 p.m. Look for Offerman as co-host and executive producer of NBC's Making It, as well as being featured in a sci-fi series on FX called Devs. Thank you for tuning in to Weekend Let's Hear It here on WMUK. I'm Kara Lawrence. Have a great weekend.